Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
With us in the studio now is Dan Chapman. He's a Welsh world champion bare-knuckle fighter who started his career early in life. He fell in love with martial arts and boxing in particular, and firstly became an amateur champion, earning several accolades, including being the first Welshman to earn the title at the Commonwealth Youth Games in 2008. Nice to see you, Dan.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Oh, it's just a pleasure to be on. I appreciate you giving me the time to speak to everybody about Dan Chapman and his boxing.
It's my pleasure. It's lovely to see you and to hear about your amazing journey. I mean, you're on your way to the next chapter soon, aren't you? You're off to Bali.
Yes, you know, I'm from Wales, South Wales. Boxing has been a huge part of my life. I was very fortunate to be able to travel the whole world. And when you travel the whole world and you get to see these beautiful countries, rich countries, poor countries, third world countries, you get life experience and you realize that even though I loved my community and where I was from, that the world is a beautiful place and I wanted to explore that. So, yes, and I was living in Wales for a long time. I was a full-time Welsh athlete, Team GB athlete for the 2012 Olympics. And then I had a serious motorcycle accident that stopped that, so I was out for a couple of years. The doctor said I'd never even fight again, you know.
God.
And then in that time, I expanded to Spain. And
so what brought you to Spain? How did you get here?
Well, for me, I had a fantastic setup back in Wales. So I had my own gym. I went from a small gym to a bigger gym and then a bigger gym. And I was really lucky that my community in South Wales were really supportive. I was taking hundreds of children off the streets. I was training over 120 client women. You know, and when you're doing those kind of things in your community, it's a big thing. Your community really relies on you.
Mm.
So, you know, it was a privilege to do that. And sadly, we took a huge knock with the pandemic. And I was lucky enough, I didn't have any finances. You know, everything I had in the gym was out of my own pocket. So when we come back after the pandemic, I came back strong.
Yeah.
But I was just totally exhausted.
And I know it's meant a lot to you to give back. The fact that you're training children and things has been amazing, because you had to put it mildly, a pretty rough start in life.
Yes, sadly, you know, there's victims and then there's survivors. And I was really fortunate to have that surviving attitude. So from a young age, sadly, that, you know, my mum and dad were heroin addicts and alcoholics. So as a young child, I went through and got to see the worst things that a child could possibly see. And, you know, for me is that, you know, a lot growing up through my foster brothers and sisters, you know, a lot of them unfortunately became what their parents were. So, you know, for me, you know, I was a very positive kid. I knew that one day I would get myself out of that environment and I would have full control on my life. And I was in and out of foster care from the age of 3 to 12, 13. And, you know, sadly, my mum wasn't getting any better. Things were getting worse. And obviously, that's a huge impact for the years and years that I went through that as a child. So I went to a really good foster home at the age of 12. And they were the first people to really show me love.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time, my mum went to prison. She had a hefty sentence of 2 to 3 years. And I knew at that point then, even though this was the first foster home that I went to that loved me like their own son, at the time I still couldn't love them back, because my attachment was still with my mum, because I knew in my head that when my mum was in prison that she's going to be clean and sober.
Yeah.
So I think, oh, this is the chance. This is good. And in that time, my mum was writing me letters every week. I was having thousands of letters, promises. And even my foster parents thought, you know, this could be maybe, you know, Dan going back to a healthy home with his mum, you know?
Yeah.
And weeks and months and years, and to be fair, she was on good behaviour there, so she was released a lot earlier. And the day she came out of jail, she phoned me full of drugs and alcohol. And that was,
oh gosh,
heavy.
Yeah,
you know,
so
and
hard.
That moment, I said to my foster parents, I said, this is now the time you become my mum and dad. So that was the best thing that possibly could have happened to me, because that's when I could cut it off.
Mm.
And I know that maybe sound like a terrible thing.
Not at all.
But at that moment, I was a broken child. So for me, I had to live in the present.
You had to protect yourself.
Yeah, and I was such a young age to make that decision. But I said to my foster parents, well, at the time, was like, look, yeah, you become my mum and dad again, and that's me done with my mum, you know?
Hmm.
So and that's when my life changed.
Wow.
So that's when the positive, like, I went on my first holiday. They taught me how to eat properly, wash my face, brush my teeth, you know, all these things. And, you know, that's when I was very lucky also that my foster parents were very disciplined with me. They were very strict. They were very old-fashioned, you know. Mm. But it was good because those principles and morals carried on as I got older.
It's obviously what you needed, having not had it for the first 12 years of your life.
1,000,000%. And, you know, I had a curfew for once in my life. I had to be home by a certain time. And it was really hard because, you know, it was still light outside. And they would say, nope, you've got to be home by this time. And I'd be like, oh, goodness me, I've got to be home, you know. I still had a little bit, you know, I had so much trauma to deal with. And they, how I dealt with that, and from, again, from that young age, that I knew if I didn't deal with that trauma, then that would affect my friendships and relationships growing up.
Yeah.
So,
but amazing to, I mean, seriously amazing to have that attitude at such a young age. As you said, that other foster brothers and sisters that you came across followed in the path of their parents, which must have been the easiest choice, I guess.
It is. You've got to remember the old saying, if you know, is blood is thicker than water. And that's sadly the reality. When you have parents who are heavily involved in alcohol and drugs, they are, everything they do is premeditated.
Mm.
So they'll do anything that they can to get what they need.
Yeah.
So the sad thing, the growing up through the foster care system, I seen it where children kept in contact with their parents. The parent was really smart. Even though they leave, they got someone looking after their children, but they keep the foot in the door.
Mm.
So they turn up to that LAC review every once a month. They say they promise some things for Christmas and birthdays. And what happens is the kid can't let that attachment go.
Mm.
And what happens is then in foster care, when you get to the age of 16, you have the entitlement to have your own home and independence. And what happens is you're allowed to go back to live with your parents. And that's what happens is the parent keeps until they're 16 and then that child goes home and then the child still becomes the parent.
Mm.
The child is putting food and drink into the cupboards. The child is feeding the mum's habit. And at that age, the child hasn't got the capacity at 16 to do that. It's still a child that didn't have a childhood.
Yeah.
So what happens then? The child becomes the parent.
Mm.
They follow the cycle of drugs and alcohol, sadly, because it's too much for them.
Yeah.
You know, and I was very lucky that because I had a sport, that also the discipline, the dedication, the hard work. And I was very lucky that when I was young, I was super fast. I was so fast. And then obviously I had a good boxing coach. So in my village in Blaengwynfi, it was a small little village. So after being in foster care, in a good home now, after dealing with all the trauma, then I had to deal with being the only Bangladesh kid in the valley. I was the only kid with a tan in my whole community. So I had to put up with the bullying. Wow. And I had to deal with, you know, when I was a kid, I was like, you know, if you start to fight me, I'll fight you, you know.
Yeah.
And I realized when I was getting good at my sport that I couldn't do that. I had to choose which road. Do I go out with my friends, taking drugs and alcohol? Or do I keep myself in the gym? And when someone tries to cause a trouble, do I walk away?
Mm.
Because now I became a name in boxing. I won every year. I won the national championships. I won 10 Welsh titles, 3-4 British titles, and then a Youth Commonwealth Games, as you spoke about earlier. You know, and I realised to become a full-time athlete and be sponsored by Adidas, by Lucozid, getting lottery funded, I couldn't put myself in those environments.
No, absolutely. And it must be difficult once you know that you are a really good fighter, if you've got people who are kind of prodding you and come on then, show us what you got. It must be really difficult to walk away. Obviously now you're used to it, but at the time it must have been tempting to smack them in the face.
But you know what, I'm going to be straight and honest with you. When I was young, there's a few mistakes that I did and I had to learn that.
Yeah.
And then I realised that I can't do that.
No.
And you're right, people poked and prodded, and when you're young, you think you know it all. You have so much, even though I went through a lot as a young child, but in the real world, I had zero experience.
Mm.
So, you know, that is something that your personality, and I realized, especially with masculinity now, I have, you know, I'm very open with my masculinity. And for me, it's, you know, especially in sport, you know, it's such a top subject right now, and you can see why so many athletes are struggling after they sport or during they sport.
Mm.
Where I realize I don't have to be a tough guy outside of the ring.
Yeah.
You know, my job is to be professional, and my character and my characteristics is that I want people to like me not because of boxing. I want other people to like me because it's me.
Yeah.
I don't need to show that I'm a tough guy and, you know, I make people like me in that way. And I'm very open on being kind and respectful. And if people see that as a sign of weakness, then that shows me how weak you are, and that shows me
Absolutely.
How strong I am.
Definitely.
For me to show those that vulnerability, a positive vulnerability, is that I've worked on myself. I'm able to be that person in
Definitely.
Any room.
Absolutely. Well done, you. I want to ask you about bare knuckle fighting, because I expect a lot of people, when they hear that, they sort of wince and go, ow, ow. I mean, it sounds like it obviously must really hurt. When you've got boxing gloves on, you have a bit of, I mean, they can still injure their knuckles, yeah. but they've got that protection with the gloves, both for their hands and also the face being hit by another person. But without those gloves, I mean, it sounds dangerous for a start.
It is. Look, for me, I'm going to be straight and honest with you. This is not the sport that I wanted to do. Like I said previously, I had a life-threatening motorcycle accident. You know, I broke both my femurs. I was in a wheelchair for 3 years.
Gosh.
I give everything that I give to boxing just got taken away from me with a pinch of salt like that. And the doctor said I'd never be able to train again. And 6-7 years later, I could feel my body getting back. And I realized I still got my talent. And I realized that, you know, I'm not a... how do you say, a dreamer. But if I say I do something, usually I do it. My both feet are on the floor. I'm quite balanced with that. And I believe that I could come back a fighter again. And, you know, after 7-8 years, I built my body back up. So I was able to compete again. And I've lost my name. You know, I was a young up-and-coming superstar on Team GB. You know, getting paid good money, tax-free. And it just got taken away. So I was forgotten about, you know, 8-9 years gone.
Yeah.
Everybody, all my friends have become world champions, European champions. And it was, I weren't sad about it. I was so proud because I know how hard it was for them to get there. But it made me sad because I knew I could have done it. And I never told people that, because I'm not going to be one of those guys down the pub. Oh, you know, I could have been this and I could have been that. I'm not one of those guys, you know. And for me is, you know, I thought, how am I going to build my career back up fast?
But again, that I have to say, Dan, that's another impressive milestone to get through, you know, the childhood. Oh. And then you start, you know, really getting somewhere with the sport. And then that happens. You know, both situations, you could have gone, you know what, I am just going to go to the pub or whatever, you know. Yeah. And you didn't both times, which is impressive.
You're absolutely right. And I think that's what makes me the man that I am today. You know, when you have those obstacles, and you're able to adapt and be positive and keep changing your environment to be better. But when those things happen, I just realize sometimes, how did my mental health stay in check? And I don't ask myself that question too much. I don't look for that answer, because for me, I've done extremely well to keep good and balanced. And it's kept me humble that you can have everything and then in seconds it could be taken away from you. And that's when, you know, I went into the bare knuckle world. And I thought, when I went to watch the sport at first, I thought, what crazy person would want to do that? That's such a stupid sport.
Well, right? I'm glad you thought it too.
I was seeing eyebrows coming off. I was seeing teeth.
Oh, God.
And I was thinking, who would do that sport? And then in the end, I went on to become a world champion in that sport.
Wow.
So I'm undefeated at the minute. I'm 7-0 as a bare knuckle fighter with 4 knockouts. I was in a company in the UK, got BKB. I won a world title in that. And then I just got recently signed last year with the biggest bare knuckle company in the world, who David Feldman and Conor McGregor own partnership with that company. And we're shown on DAZN, where millions and millions of viewers get to see that. So, of course, I wanted to be a world champion with glove boxing, but where I am in my career right now, the best offer and the best views and eyes are on this sport right now, and I'm going to take it as far as I can to be a 2-times world champion.
Amazing. Good for you. You're such an inspiration. And it must be wonderful giving back to kids, as I say, teaching kids, especially kids from underprivileged situations and kids that have struggled like yourself, to be able to help them, the kind of people who helped you, must be wonderful.
Well, do you know, like I said, you know, when I had my gym in the UK, but the last year I was working with the government, with the council, and I was working with dads who had broken relationships with their children because of drugs and alcohol. So their children had been into foster care or long-term foster care. And I was working doing 8 week sessions, 8 week group sessions with the dads. And it shows that when you've been through that experience, that I was getting more out of a 45 minute session with the dads than a psychiatrist. I've been working with these guys for 3 years. Hmm. And that's due to having real experience and talking about certain subjects that they can drop their guard and speak to you and be honest with you, because they know that when you talk about these certain things, only you would know that if you've been through that.
Mm.
So these guys, they don't trust the police, they don't trust social services. So this is why they've stayed a drug addict or not getting the right guidance from these people. Even though they've asked for the help and they're on the courses, these guys don't tell the truth because they're afraid to tell the truth because they're going to lose contact with their children full time.
Mm.
So when I was speaking to these guys in the session, they would come out that they still smoking marijuana. They still, and then the psychiatrist there and the workers there could then decipher all the information, so put them on the right track, because they're not lying anymore. They've offloaded.
Yeah,
they've spoken because they trust me.
Yeah,
and that's when I was getting really good results. And for me, I was doing talks around all the schools in South Wales. So I was talking about motivation. I was talking about foster care. I was talking about all these subjects that children need to know and need to learning them to be authentic. And because like when we was in school, you'd always have you're categorized, and there's so much peer pressure to be something that sometimes inside that you're not that.
Yeah.
And for me is that when I was talking about these things and doing PowerPoints in schools, I may be only talking to maybe 20% of the audience, but that 20% of the audience, it was super effective, because after the talks I was doing, I was having lots of one-to-ones with the children then, because they reached out.
Yeah, nice.
You know, which was incredible. And that's something I do miss back home, even though I've been in Spain now for the last 4 years. I love doing that work behind the scenes that nobody knew about. So, you know, and in my community, I was giving out hundreds of meals every week to the children who didn't have that at home. So I didn't used to have a lot. They used to pop in the gym. They used to just grab a meal. So it'd be no fuss made about it. So nobody would know about it. So these are the things that made things a little bit secretly, so they didn't feel embarrassed.
Yeah.
And these are the things that we should be doing in our communities, are those things, you know, opening boxing gyms and getting the kids off the streets and making them feel part of something.
Definitely.
Super, super important.
Yeah. Well, Dan Chapman, thank you so much for coming in today. Really lovely to get to know you better. And I wish you all the luck in the world moving forwards. Keep in touch whilst you're in Bali.
Yes, I'm super excited. We're opening our own boxing gym in Bali. It's called The Ring. If you guys follow me on Dan_Chapman01 on Instagram, please, any questions, if you're ever in Bali, please stop by.
Brilliant. Thanks, Dan. You take care.
You're welcome. Bye.